Hey everyone, welcome to another episode with some great horror slashers. Just a little reminder, today is the last day for you to vote in our poll to decide what film we should watch for episode 31. Just head to our website, podofthedam.com, click on the Ep 31 poll link and it will take you there and make your pick. You've got till midnight tonight on the 28th, but why wait? Do it right now and then let's dive into some more slasher horror.
This episode of Pod of the Damned is rated S for spoilers. You've been warned.
Hi, Gail Weathers, author of the Woodsboro Murders. Do you think the killer will strike again?
Dear Mom and Dad, I've been at a sleepaway camp for almost 3 weeks. And I'm getting very scared.
It's cool you get to remember your mom this way.
At least I get to see her on the anniversary of her death, even if she is being chased by a psycho.
Are you suggesting that someone's trying to make a real-life sequel?
Someone wants to scare you to death.
So, we're in the movie.
Turn the wheel!
Oh, my God!
Anyone want to help me pick some strawberries?
Nope, but I'll give you a hand with those melons. Talking about her boobs.
Ew, writing is so bad.
Hello?
Hello, Sydney.
What do you want?
I want you. It's showtime.
Welcome back to Pod of the Damned. We have got another very exciting, a bloody exciting episode for you today. I'm Em.
I'm Dean.
And I'm Shori. And it was just my head. It was Jennifer Aniston's body.
That was such a good line.
That's a brilliant line.
Great line.
So clever. Well, we are back today with more slashers because honestly, one episode is not enough. You'll be used to it by now that there are certain subgenres. We give you a two-episode special because some of them are just heavy hitters and you just got to do it. You know, and as we've said before on other episodes, sometimes even narrowing down subgenre picks to six movies is so hard for us. Hard.
Oh, my brain almost exploded with trying to decide what ones we could watch and what ones I wanted you guys to watch.
I have to admit, Shori, when we were coming up to slashers and we all had to pick one, I kind of imagined you as one of those like fembots from Austin Powers where their head just kind of goes or it's explodes.
The meme of Charlie from It's Always Sunny with the board beside him going like all nuts. Because you don't know what to pick. Because there was, I would have loved to have done My Bloody Valentine. I would have loved to have done The Burning. I would have loved to have done, there's hundreds of so many good slashes.
There's so many slashes out there. It's
just so good. And it's such a brilliant genre. And there are so many that, there's a lot of them that really do focus well on just the slashing side of it. There are some that have really good stories with just the slasher involved. Like there's, and it's yesterday, it's my favorite subgenre of horror. And I think it's also the least serious of the subgenres of horrors, as much as
Which is one of the reasons why I love it as well. Really, the amount of fun that can be had with it all is so brilliant. And so,
comfort horror.
It is comfort horror. That's a good way to put it.
Oh, 100%.
I like that as a new term, like comfort horror. Because I kind of think of it as like fun. I talk about things that are like, scary fun, but like comfort horror.
Like there are jump scares in most of them, but they're also not going to make you like, they're not going to give you the dread that say Midsommar does or Hereditary or things like that. That's true. You're not going to be sitting there going,
I can't stress it enough again. Don't watch Midsommar high. Let's just don't do it. My mistake.
That was your mistake. Were you high when you watched that?
I texted you telling you, did I not mention it when we were talking about it? I may have been high while watching it.
Oh,
Dean. That was an interesting choice. It was an interesting choice.
Yeah, that was an interesting choice. Like, whoa.
I didn't know in advance. Like,
what can I ask, and you can edit this out if you want to. Like, what kind of high were you?
I had a joint that was given to me as a birthday gift last year to help me get through lockdown that I hadn't touched.
What a sweet.
And I didn't have the joint at the start. I had the joint just before things got interesting. when they all took drugs. I was like, this is taking a while.
Oh no.
And I was one of those nights, so why not do this? And then was like, oh, okay. So we're going on a journey together. All right.
I've made a huge, tiny mistake.
Well, no, it wasn't that bad. It was, Maybe now then, when people
no, I mean, I'm just really glad that,
to what I thought of it.
Yeah, really glad that it wasn't a psychedelic or anything like that.
And then you found out you gutted one of your bear friends.
Well, besides which, like, it wouldn't have been because you can't get any good stuff. We've been in lockdown for, like, how long? You can't. No, all right.
Well, this is true.
You know, the quality, it's quality over quantity.
Anyway, this, and this is a different kind of horror. We digress. But
don't you try.
I was going to say the horror of not being able to get any, but no. But don't do drugs.
Well, actually, if you go by the rules of the slasher, if you're going to do drugs, you're going to die.
This is true.
I'm the gay one. I'm going to be killed no matter what. Like,
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, no, you're very early.
Well, you're like a triple sort of whammy because you're gay and you ain't no virgin and you So, I mean,
you're fucked.
Look, I just figure, as long as I make everyone a nice meal to enjoy for the rest of the film, then fine, we'll be fine.
So,
just go out in an entertaining way.
As much as this, okay, so back to what we were talking about.
What a tangent. What a tangent, right? We've just gone on.
As much as this was a difficult subgenre to pick movies for, I think we did really well. I think that the films we talked about yesterday and the films we're about to talk about today are all great. And it's a really good representation of like like what you were talking about, Shuri, like the diversity of this genre in terms of what it offers. Yep. So I think the first film
we're going with is a lot.
Yes. And I think the first film we're going with is yours, Dean. Is that right?
Which one?
My pick for this one was actually, following in from yesterday's episode, I picked Scream 2. So, I mean, I know we've had our sequels episode, I know, but when I'm looking at slashers and slashers that I love in particular, Scream 2 is a great one. I don't know if both of you agree with me on that. The way it picks up with the previous, the way it picks up with the previous movie, the way it plays with the tone, plays with the theme, reintroduces the characters. Normally it's about one character, maybe two. To be able to have the elements build back in and all the moment, like I love this film. I don't know. Okay. For me, it was that I watched it and just,
Let's get our IMDb description and then, jump into it.
2 years after the first series of murders, as Sydney acclimates to college life, someone donning the Ghostface costume begins a new string of killings.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So I was curious when Dean picked this one. I was like, really? Scream 2? Is it like I felt like it was sort of a bit of a random pick, but I had seen it before and I watched it again because it had been quite a while. And watching it again, I thought, actually, you know what? Especially for a sequel, I was like, this is actually quite good. And especially like that opening sequence is very clever. I really like the opening theater sequence where they're going to see the movie Stab that's based off what happened in Woodsboro.
Heather Graham playing, but also the brilliance of Jada. This is the thing that's amazing about it. Like the brilliance of Jada. Jada is so wonderful in this. Mm. Like to take that trope and narrative that existed for Drew, put it in there, add another layer in regards to, you know, people of color in cinema and women of color in cinema, and then to layer that again in such a good way, just like, wow. And she plays it so well. I did want to touch on the thing for me again with this film. There are certain films that sit within my heart for a crazy reason, and that's because I worked at the Warner Brothers Studio Store at Crown Casino. And we would have... Yeah, which is cool, but we would have snippets of the film playing over, you know, I was a casual, but working full-time hours. Like I was kind of, I was one of the small managers and stuff. So I was working a lot like crazy. And it meant we saw the previews for these films over and over and over and heard them. And the music and the tone and things, for me, it's just, I think I love the first Scream more than I love the second Scream, but Scream 2 is the one I think of first because of that.
That makes sense. And like it is a fantastic sequel. And I love that with that opening sequence, not only like, yes, Jada, amazing. But I love that again, this is a very meta film where it's offering us a commentary on how the media responds to tragedy. Like you think about this term tragedy porn, the way the media will latch onto a tragedy and will appropriate it and repackage it and sell it to us over and over, yeah, and over and over again. And, you know, you're watching it, you're thinking, Jesus, it's only been 2 years and Hollywood's, yeah, made a movie about, mm-hmm, this tragedy. And but you just think, no, yeah, but this is the point. This is a commentary on how the media responds to these kinds of things. And it's a really great setup because it means that not only is it 2 years since it happened, so there might be weirdos out there that Sydney has to look out for, but because the film has come out, it creates this entire world of tension.
A new layer.
Because because everyone, not just, you know, some random psycho who's, you know, invested, but everyone is aware that it's 2 years since it happened and it's, mm-hmm, you know, everyone's talking about it. So it kind of sets the scene. And I still
love how funny it is having Tori Spelling playing, and one of the Baldwins playing the characters in the film.
No, that's Luke Wilson.
Is it not a Baldwin? I thought it was a Baldwin. It's,
yeah,
Luke Wilson.
That's almost, yeah, even funny. But it's funny because that's a fantastic reference back to the first one where she goes, they talk about if they made a movie about you, who'd, yes, play you? And she goes, I'd probably get someone like Tori Spelling.
Yeah,
and then they have
that.
Tori Spelling. Like, it's, and then there's the scene with Dewey and Randy in the coffee shop. And they're talking about how, I can't remember who they say Dewey is played by, but then Randy's like, I got some guy who was on like one episode Friends at one point or something like that. Like, he doesn't even get it. You know, he's one of the main characters in the film, the first two films, but he gets played by some rando character. Like, it's just so well done.
Yeah,
I love it.
It is a really good sequel. And like all good, now we were chatting about this, like all good sequels or new seasons of content that came out around this time, you always get the fresh haircuts. And you can, like, there's no denying that is part of what everyone, maybe not everyone, but what a lot of people are looking forward to. And you get Gail Weathers, like, she's got the bob with like the extreme like red and black streaks, and it's very like kind of, you're getting very like 80s power suit vibe, like very
I mean, isn't it such an interesting twist on the last Scream film that we talked about yesterday?
I think it's meant to reflect her, the way that she, her success and the fact that she's become even more cutthroat, like she looks more
severe, a part of what I think as well is, I think when popularity happened, like, you were allowed to cut your hair, unlike the girl from Felicity, where cutting the hair made everything wrong. But it's that thing as well where a part of me actually turns around and goes, you know what? I just feel like it was a little power control thing in the narrative behind the scenes. I don't know why. I just do.
Maybe. I don't know. All I do know is there's actually a moment where her and Dewey are arguing and he makes a point of going, by the way, nice streaks, and then storms off. And I'm like, it's funny because when you see it in a certain light, she does look like she's got zebra stripes on the side of her head.
Oh, completely, like, completely. And I think that was also intentional to make sure that she didn't just look like Neve Campbell.
Because they do have similar haircuts in this film. I will say,
do you notice in the poster, Courtney Cox's hair is blown out to the biggest degree possible?
Yes.
This is like why I just look at it and go, so interesting. not the important part of the film we need to talk about, but
it is interesting.
It plays in my mind.
Go, Shuri.
I was going to say, I will never forgive this film.
Is it Phil Galwitz's hair?
Because they killed Randy. And then they have to bring him back in the stupidest possible way in the third one.
Oh, my God, no, we're not talking about Scream 3. We're just not doing it.
But
I'm not having it. We can make another podcast. Before Scream 5 comes out, we can do a podcast looking at Scream 3 and 4 and then watch Scream 5 together and then talk about it. We are not bringing that travesty of film into this conversation. I won't have it.
Yeah,
sorry.
This
it's awful. And you are 100% right. What they do and then what they do again is just,
This one broke my heart. They killed my boy.
I screamed at when I watched it in the cinemas. Like, that was, you know, it's the tension of excitement that you get while watching. No, not Randy's. Like, I was freaking out.
Yeah.
I mean, I get what you guys are saying, but in some ways, I think that was really clever because they it was unexpected. They did something that genuinely made the audiences feel something. Mm. Like the audience were grieving and they were shocked, and it was and it was horrific because it was someone everyone loved, which is sometimes you've got to do that to like.
And Randy is absolutely. Like, I know I said that in yesterday's episode that Randy is me, but Randy is the viewer in this series. He 100%. Is the person sitting there going, well, this is bullshit. Why are they doing this? You can't do that. This is a sequel. You have to have a higher body count. You have to do this. We have to have more people on the set. We have to, and he's living like it's he's watching the movie as well. And so to kill him off is killing off the, well, not the audience, but it's killing off the tether we have to the universe. So it's you know, I didn't expect it. I remember the first time he's going, no. You know, if they'd killed off Gale or Dewey, it would have been just as bad. Like, but I think he was unfortunately, the more expendable of the main four characters.
I would agree, unfortunately, I think he was the more expendable.
The beauty of Randy, the way he plays it, the way they do, you forget he's there. Mm. This is what's amazing in both films. Mm. There's such artistry to it. But even though I know what's happening, I know what's going to happen, I know what's coming, you don't realize it. And it's just, this is why, it gets me every time. It's brilliant. Like, I'm watching it going, I know this is the one where Randy gets killed, but oh, yeah, that's right, Randy's here. You know?
I get very embarrassed for him when he's sitting in that classroom talking about sequels and he's doing all the voices and stuff, because I'm going, I've been that person too. This is really embarrassing. This is hurting me. Stop it, please.
Oh no. Well, I was going to say, so for me, the only thing about this film that I don't like is I feel like they overdo Dewey's character in this film. I feel like
the only thing is Dewey. I would say the singing scene in the cafeteria.
Okay.
and the fact that they make a point that to go on about how the black characters are never really there and then actively do that with the casting and choice. Sorry, back to you, Em.
No, fair. No, those are all fair points, just things I hadn't really thought about. But it always just sticks out to me that I think it actually becomes a little bit over the top and ham-fisted to the point that the whole, like, dopey thing they do and his really kind of dopey interactions with other characters start to feel they border on cringy rather than in the first film I found him so funny and lovable and adorable to watch. And I don't know, something.
He does. Something, there is a quote. I'm just trying to find it where.
I mean, I don't think he's really, when you think about it, he's a hanger on. He's not a part of the group in my mind.
No, but he gets a lot of airtime.
I think he definitely has a thing for Sid as well.
Yeah.
I think in either, it's a bit like either a big brother or a guy who's like,
I
think it is a big brother thing.
But there's a quote from the film where it's either Gail's talking to him or Randy's talking to him, and he says, "How do you know that my dim-witted inexperience isn't merely a subtle form of manipulation used to lower people's expectations, thereby enhancing my ability to effectively maneuver within any given situation?" And you go, did you add that in there because you've made him such a doofus of a character, or was that always the ploy? Was going to be no, he just acts a bit like that so people don't take him seriously, and then he always ends up getting stabbed anyway.
It is an interesting. You're right. That's an interesting line, because it is. You do kind of stop and go, hang on, is that you know? Because even the way he delivers
just
that
keep
line,
going, guys. Sorry, just keep going. I'll be back.
Even the way he delivers that line feels it's in one of those moments where it's starting to feel really over the top, like the really doofusy bit. And I don't know. Like,
it's the I've practiced this in front of a mirror, waiting for someone to say this to me one day. And I've put all these big words in it so I sound intelligent.
Yep.
And I think I'm not a huge fan of this sequel. I think it's good, but I think it's also the problem with it. I think too is I have a problem with the ending. I have a problem with it being Billy's mother.
Okay.
But then I was reading about it, and it turns out that was because the script got leaked, and it was supposed to be Mickey and what's her friend's name? Hallie. It was supposed to be them, and it was going to play off the, well, there are never, you know, the African-American characters always get killed off early. Oh. She's going to be one of the killers. But unfortunately, the script got leaked, And it just ruined it. And so they went, okay, well, that's it. We have to change it all up. And so I'm pretty sure that's like a last minute thing.
That's really interesting, because I see the ending of this. I didn't really think too much about the fact that it's Billy's mum and how I felt about that. I just thought that the woman who plays Billy's mum, I was really impressed with her as an actress,
Jackie from Roseanne.
Yes. Yeah. The way she,
she's so good.
Yeah. The way she plays that role is fantastic. Mm. I love her acting in the ending where she is revealed to be one of the killers. I love her acting of that scene. I find Nikki a bit. It felt like they were trying to create another Skeet Ulrich kind of character. He had a very similar 100%. Vibe to me. Which kind of I felt was a bit lazy, and even his rationale for being a killer, I understand that kind of narrative about media violence and the effect it has in reality was very very timely, and a conversation that was happening more broadly in society, but it still felt a bit lazy. It just felt like they kind of just tacked it on there, and I was like, okay, you know. But that's so interesting hearing like what it was meant to be. I mean, I do think, like I said, her acting was amazing in terms of the reveal of who it was. I was like, okay. I mean, it was his mum. Dean's just very unlike Dean. Like, he's put his hand up. Shuri didn't love
only because I jumped out and everyone would know.
No, Shuri didn't love the ending in terms of who the killers were. And then I
loved it.
Well, then I was saying that I didn't have strong feelings about who they were, but I really enjoyed her acting. Billy's mum. I really enjoyed her characterize the way she acted out that character. Yeah. And I thought Mickey was a lazy choice.
Yeah, so here's the thing for me, right? Like, I think Mickey was a lazy choice, and I think that is smart and intentional. Mickey is that obvious thing left and right, because it was, and for me, I remember the first time I watched it and the surprise with the reveal of the mother. There's no way we could have known that. There's no way we could have seen it coming. There's nothing in the plot line tying to it except for the lines that she says. For me, I just think it's smart and great and wonderful to create that twist that wasn't even needed. And I remember
it's also very reverse Friday the 13th.
I hate the bloody that Sid is studying drama and that they do that scene and force us to sit and watch through that pisses me off. As a person who works in the industry and as a person that studied, I'm like, for fuck's sake, this is annoying. I understand the tropes and points they're getting to, but ugh. But the thing with it is, like, why would Sydney make those choices? That's not Sydney. But anyway, where it gets us through with that scene and that shootout and everything that happens is worth it for that reason. But also the reveal when Gail's at the door. I remember watching that and everyone in the cinema, you could hear the breath just get sucked back in. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing about it. It's all smart. It's all clever. It's all done so well. And you can sometimes forget that watching so many times, but I go back to the first time I watched it every single time.
No, that's a good point. To be completely honest, I forget when I first watched this film, and I don't know why I forget, but so sadly I don't have that sort of memory of that first initial shock. I don't mind, I don't mind the ending. I do, and we had a chat about this via text, and I do want to point this out, that I do really enjoy that chase scene when the Ghostface killer is chasing Gail Weathers through the school and into the sound room. It's just really, that is, the pacing is just perfect, and you're right there with her, like, and it's when she just slips around the corner just as he pops out, you're just like,
it's so good.
Like, it's really, really well shot. Really good pacing. Scene.
The love story between Dewey and Gail in this film just gets me every time.
Really? Like,
really? I mean, at the end when she puts down the mic, I can't believe we're going on and on and on. We're talking about the first film. We've still got two more films to talk about. But I'm like, do you not like this love story? I love it. When Gail puts down the mic while in the first one, it's just beautiful and great in heaven. It's everything for me.
There, you know.
Oh, my God.
I'm so sorry. I don't dislike it. Okay. I'm just not living for it. That's okay. The difference. I don't dislike it all right. at all.
When I have that music.
You live
when
for
they
it.
Play the do 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 and they're just looking at each other. I go weak at the knees.
I hate that music. See, yeah, do you know
really what music?
Do you know what I associate that music with? This is it's unfortunate. It's what I was talking about before. I associate that music with what I feel is a very ham-fisted approach to Dewey's character in the sequel. And I hear it and I'm like, oh, they're going to overdo it again. I don't actually think of their romance when I hear that music.
Just makes you think they're trying to be twin
face. We have the complete opposite
thing. I know.
It's the Woodsboro music. It's not Twin Peaks. Yeah. They've just taken the chords that they had in Scream 1.
Well, it's Dewey's music. It's Jewish.
I love that we have a completely opposite approach.
The Doofus Waltz.
Wow.
I love that. No, I don't hate the romance, though. We don't have completely opposite views.
No. But, like, it's just that thing of it to see it so differently.
But you know what? You get down with your bad self. You love that romance. You do it.
I do.
No, do it. Live for it. We should go on to
We should
next
move
movie.
On. So the next movie was my choice, which I think is a movie that is a terrible movie up until the end. I think it hinges right on the ending that makes it such a iconic movie.
Mm-hmm.
You're not wrong.
Let me go into it real quick.
Okay.
So my choice was Sleepaway Camp from 1983. The IMDb is Angela Baker, a shy, traumatized young girl, is sent to summer camp with her cousin. Shortly after her arrival, anyone with sinister or less than honorable intentions, that's a really nice way to put it, toward her get their comeuppance.
So.
Okay. I'm going to sit back for a bit and I'm going to let you both go.
Well, I'm going to start with a little nostalgic moment because this was... I don't know if either of you remember, but this was one of the first films that the three of us had all seen and we chatted about, and it got us chatting about doing a podcast together.
I
absolutely remember this because I think something came up on Twitter. You guys were having a conversation. I was like, I would like to talk about horror movies as well. And then something came up about sleep. Such a thing. And
third wheel makes a tricycle, Emma. It's fine.
Yeah. I'm like, if I'm a third wheel, I'm like the biggest and noisiest third wheel you've ever fucking encountered.
those big wheel bikes.
I'm just like the massive wheel. But I remembered something coming up about Sleepaway Camp. And Shaura, you were like, you've got to watch it. And I was like, okay. And I still remember sitting down at home. I was on my own. And I put on this movie and I was like, what the fuck? And it got to the end, that scene. And I was like, oh, my God. God, what? And like that face at the end is really unnerving and creepy. And once you get to what the ending, the reveal is, everything else in the movie you suddenly see in a completely different light.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is a trip. Do you want to just explain the ending of this film so that it makes sense to people what we're talking about?
I mean, it's kind of hard to explain without going through the whole movie because it also hinges on a couple of other scenes. But I think what I'm trying to say is, like, without the ending and a couple of other little bits, this is just a very generic slasher.
Yes.
But there's some scenes that get cut into of the past and Angela's backstory that make this so iconic when you're talking horror slashers, because you've got to deal with the dad who is... it's the dad who's gay, isn't it? The dad's in bed with another guy at one point.
Yeah,
the crazy aunt they have who is, you're going to love staying with us, and she's all bonkers.
God, that's right.
There's scenes where, you know, there's an accident and Angela's got a brother or there's kids, you're not sure exactly, and one of them
dies.
Twins, and it all comes to a head with people getting killed and there's really creepy cook who I'm glad gets murdered in a really horrible way because he's obviously a pedophile.
I was
so satisfied with that kill.
Yeah. That's the scene where, like, I recommend the movie to people and then I go, but just the kitchen scene, just get past it. He dies horribly and you'll
Don't
love
worry,
it. But otherwise,
die.
And it's worthwhile. Yeah.
But the the ending, and I'll try and explain it as best I can because it is a little bit weird, but the ending is they've people are dying and they've Angela's disappeared and they find her on the beach and they cut around and she's caressing the head of the boy who liked her. So she's cut his head off. Mm. And then what happens is Angela stands up and it is obvious that she was the brother, not the sister.
Angela's naked, and you can Angela's see that naked. Angela is actually genetically a male, and yeah. The aunt has. I'm gonna word this in the best way possible. The aunt has apparently forced Angela. Well, the aunt has forced the male child to live as a female because the aunt, who is crazy, wanted a child, girl.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm glad you put it that way.
How else do we explain it?
I love that the backstory of, because it's, you know, it's full frontal nudity. Like, you see a penis. But the backstory of it is that they made a cast of the actress that played Angela for most of the movie. They made a cast of her face and put a mask on this guy from a local college. They said to him, we need someone to nude up at the end of this movie. This is the twist. Can you do it? And he's like, no. And they said, we'll give you $50. And so he had a few beers in him, put the mask on. And I think that's what gives it the absolute creepiness of it too, is that it's a mask. It's not actually the face. And he's just the noise. And it was just this drunk college kid who decided to just get his kid off for a movie at the end of
it's so weird. It's so like that face and that noise coupled with the naked body of a child is so unnerving. It's so unnerving for a million different reasons, because one, you finally found out in that moment that Angela is the killer.
Mm-hmm.
Two, the reveal that Angela is biologically a male is so unexpected, and your brain's kind of going, hang on, why? What is this? What?
Yeah, and that's
everything is jarring. No... Everything is jarring. Yeah. And you're just like, what the fuck?
And I want to say, like, the character of the auntie, one of the things with this film, like, we're going to focus a lot on that ending, but there's lots of other bits to talk about in regard to it.
It's a very gay film, like, so.
It's a very gay film. It's literally, but it's like someone is trying, and I've tried to Google search and I cannot for the life of me. I feel like someone's trying to make a John Waters-esque film. They're trying.
That would make sense. Yeah.
They're trying to be tongue in cheek. And with the casting of the aunt, who is, I'm just going to ask, was the aunt played by a man in drag or is that by a woman?
I don't know. Let me see if I can find out.
That was me asking a rhetorical question, thinking Shory will either know or will jump on the IMDb. Where do we even begin?
It's a woman.
It's played, and it's a look and a play in a very specific way. It's interesting the way gender is played with in this film, but every character is so overdone. Everything is so over-extremed to wind you to this point. I think they should be more lucky that people stayed in the cinema to watch the twist at the end.
The thing that always, you know, is, I think, interesting too is that when you watch other slashers, this is the guys in the camp are all wearing crop tops, short shorts.
Not just short shorts, like shorts that are three sizes too small so you can see up their clackers. Like, wow.
Like getting fly's eyes where the nuts are hanging on either side.
Yeah, it's not okay.
But then the girls are very dressed normally. So it's like it's almost flipped the whole script in that, well, here's the sex objects are here and usually it's the girls getting their tops off. You compare it to like a Friday the 13th where there's always some kind of female nudity in there.
Mm.
Whereas this is just...
Yeah.
There's just dudes in short shorts
it's
and crop tops.
The other way. Yeah.
I think it's hard to think if you're giving it too much credit in a way because it's hard to tell.
Everything is so extreme and so over the top. Like the way the deaths occur, the senseless way the deaths occur, the fact that the one character that we wish to be killed is killed, but a hair tong is put, I'm assuming, in her vajayjay, which is how she is murdered while suffocated. And it's just like, whoa, there's so much here. But then I can't help but sit here and go, okay, so what the hell are you saying about gender? What are you saying about gender dysphoria? Angela just doesn't go a little nuts. She's biting the skin off a person. And we can't not bring up the fact that there's, and this, I keep wanting to research more and find more and find interviews about this space and conversation, because it's another interesting layer and level about that. For me, I think it's always, it's been an interesting thing. Every time it comes up every year, I used to do shows at an LGBTIQ radio station here in Australia, Joy 94.9. So every single year at Halloween, this is a film that gets mentioned on one show or another. And sometimes it can be in an interesting way. Sometimes it cannot be. Sometimes it can be in a stupid way. And people turn around and go, well, what does this mean for gender? What does this mean for trans people? What does this mean? Everyone has different spaces and tones and opinions. I think for me, I always look at it and go, an interesting point is it's about a person forcing a person to live in the gender that they are not. So it's not about the body so much as the gender that they are not. And for me, then I can't help but go, that speaks to the more important thing of letting a person be who they are. But a lot of other people see it the other way and then see it as, I know many people who don't like it because they see it as, because a person's trans, they're a killer. And and even though that, and this is the problem with it all. Where's this info? Where's the touch?
I have to admit,
none of it exists.
Yeah, I feel the same way about this film. It's a film that just, it's just constantly got me questioning what are we meant to be taking from this film about gender, because there is clearly a lot happening, as you say, about gender
board.
Dysphoria. You can, I think, a very simplistic reading could be that, you know, that this film is a metaphor that for the idea that, you know, being trans is horrific and trans people are monsters. But perhaps it's not that. Perhaps it's more than that. Perhaps it's the opposite.
And it's gender across the board. Like it's not just that. But when you look at the guy that runs the camp is a literal old man, and the girl who is 13 flirts with him, and it's gender everywhere. It's when we've got one character that's developed, so all the boys like her, but she picks the one person that doesn't pay her attention, but is also a person who is so scrawny and physically. There's a lot of conversations about puberty and gender and sexuality and sex. It's a lot more than just that one beat.
I do agree with both of you on those accounts, because I think it's a very, there's a lot we can look into about it. But then there's also the part of me that watches a lot of schlock that goes, did these writers just go, wouldn't it be funny if the killer has a dick at the end, but it's also a girl?
That's
this is like, and I get all the other conversations that can be had, because it's a fascinating film in that regard. But then it's also, there's this part of me that just goes, the sophomoric humor of, haha, it's a girl, but she's also got a penis. Do you know what I mean? Like,
and
I feel
that's
like
the thing.
That's
you're
where
exactly
they went
right.
to as well.
Like, it's and that's the thing about it. Like, it could just be that, but because it's so campy, and not just camp as in sleepaway camp, but camp as in is he though gay risk,
camp
broken thing.
Yeah, and as you said,
it's so campy that it makes us go, what do I want? And imagine if you it's just like, there's just a lot in this that is confusing. And you're right. Like, this is the problem.
I think
we're
for a lot of the characters
here,
too.
And if any of you know or director articles or anything, I honestly feel like they were going hard for the schlock, hard for the camp. And you may be right. There may not be a broader conversation here because we've never heard more from it. But I mean,
there
are going,
three sequels to it as well.
Have you watched any of those?
No, I haven't. Not heard anything good about any of them. So I'm a bit more.
I'm just wondering, do we know if they play on the gender narrative in any way, shape, or form?
Not
or
sure.
Horror camp?
Look, leave it with me. I'm sure I can find them and I'll watch them. I'll take that.
I was about to say, I'm not going to lie. They're actually, thanks to my friends Plex, all of the films that we've talked about in this episode and the one before have all been on that Plex already. So I already have the next two films. I want them to be Shorey certified as something before I watch them. That's all I'm saying.
I think too, like, you know, we talk about this, but this is one of those movies that, as Emma said before, the ending is a very what the fuck ending. Like, I showed this a couple of years ago to my wife. She'd never even heard of the movie. I said, look, we're watching horror movies for October. You know, we always get into the spirit of it. Let's watch some movies. Let's watch this. Sleepaway Camp's a classic in the slasher genre. She's like, okay. We started watching it. She's going, this is shit. I don't want to watch this. This is stupid. It's making and we get to the end and I look, I did the old, I'm going to sit and watch her while the ending happens. And I watched her face and she just went, what the fuck? And it's the same reaction. I think everybody who, the first time you see this movie without thinking in depth of anything else. And that's why I said at the start, it's a movie that's known more for its ending than anything else.
Yeah.
It's a literal what the fuck ending, because that's the reaction that most people have.
And maybe that's the reason that we can't find much commentary about the rest of the film and its take on gender, because the film, labors on the ending because it's so shocking and so in your face that that's all anyone talks about, you know?
But that's the thing, I think what kills me is it ends with, she's a man, that's it.
That's like literally it ends the end, with that.
And it's like, well, hang on, like, do you shoot her? Do you stop her? Is she still going crazy? Like, looking at it not from the gender thing, but from a, this is the villain, or this is the person killing people. Does she end up in prison? Is she Hannibal Lecter?
Well, like, that's why I want to watch the sequels,
I feel bad now. I feel bad now because I'm also saying, I'm also saying she, knowing that the character is now a boy. Like, so I don't want to confuse myself genderly. But that's my part of it where I just go, and this is why when Shori just said, maybe they were just going for schlock, you could be 100% right, because they literally just make the end, she's a man, baby, kind of thing, and then it's over. It drives me crazy because it's like, what?
And like I said, I love the, you know, it's a movie that maybe unintentionally opens up all these conversations about all the
I don't think it's unintentional. I don't think it can be. Someone's watched John Waters films. There's intent in costuming. There's intent in tone. The aunt, the way the aunt looks at the camera and says lines, there's intent with elements, not with everything, but with certain elements. And that would also make sense, having the casting of the old guy and the young, you know what I mean? I just feel like I need to do some more research on the director, because I just feel like there must be.
And do you know what? These, like, you could both be right. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are many people involved in the making of a film. It's entirely possible that there were certain, you know, certain people involved that were just there for the schlock, and that was their contribution to the film, and that there were other people involved in different parts that were like, we're going to feed this other little subtext in here as well.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. We need to go and do more research.
I'm just reading.
Believe me, I've been doing the research. I can't find it.
I'll get on it as well, because I'm really curious about this one.
The only interesting thing I found was that the director dedicated to his mother.
Yes. There's a lot there.
What?
His mum had passed away before he made the movie, but could you imagine being alive and your son makes this film and he goes, dedicated to my mum, and your mum just goes, what the fuck is that?
She comes back from the dead just to go, we need to have a talk.
She sits up out of the grave just to slap him and go, what kind of tribute is that? What are you trying to tell me, my son? Like, that is so...
Maybe.
That makes the whole situation even stranger to me, knowing that. Like, is that some kind of Freudian shit? Like, I don't know what's
going on. How can there not be? I would never dedicate a film like this to my mother. How could there not be a Freud? But now I don't want to force. She's passed away. Let's not. Where do we go?
I'm going to read about this.
This is our second Slashers episode. And our first one was like, yeah. And this one, we're in tangent hell.
We're all just like, what? Oh, my God. Well, perhaps we should move on to our final film on that note. Because otherwise we could tangent forever on this film, because it's a whole lot of what the fuckery. It's crazy. I did, even though we say this film isn't great, I did actually really enjoy watching though, and I'm glad that I've been introduced to this film. And I'm going to go and read up more about it, because I must know.
You mean Sleepaway Camp or the next one?
Yes, Sleepaway Camp. I must know.
It's one of those when you're doing, like, if you were doing a Slashers 101, it's sort of, it's a top 10 classic slasher in that regard. Like, it's not a great film, but there's just so much about it that makes it interesting.
Also, if you're talking about queer horror, or just representations of queerness in horror, I think this would be a, you must watch this. Yeah,
totally. Definitely.
Well, our final film was my choice, and it is a film called The Final Girls. We've really enjoyed riding the meta wave, and this is just going to be the perfect one to see us out. So, Shura, do you want to hit us with IMDb for this one?
So it is a young woman grieving the loss of her mother, a famous scream queen from the 1980s, finds herself pulled into the world of her mum's most famous film. Reunited, the women must fight off the film's maniacal killer.
Yeah, this is just such a cute film. It's so good. I think this is such a joy to watch. I just discovered this randomly on Netflix or wherever a while back, and Elroy and I watched it together, and we were like, wow, that was.
And I actually don't know why this wasn't at the cinema. This is a brilliant film.
It bombed, really? Unfortunately. Yeah. It didn't last very long. I'm just looking through now.
Wow. Because I was shocked. I hadn't heard it of it before because I hadn't. I was shocked. But also, as we were watching it, I had to keep trying to remember whether it was an M or a Shorey pick because it was just so good on both levels.
It's like, not a good sign
two different sides of. Sorry.
I was going to say, it's not a good sign in the IMDb when it just lists the budget and doesn't list how much it made at the box office. It's not a good sign.
It really shocks me because this film is just
brilliant.
It's just brilliant. Yeah. Like the pacing is perfect. It's like for those who are not. The cast is great. For those who don't know, this film is it is a love letter to the slasher subgenre of horror. It's so meta to the point that, as the description says, the characters find themselves in a movie that they're watching.
Literally.
So they go to watch a film at the cinema because the main character's mother has died 3 years ago and she was a famous scream queen in the 80s. And they go to watch an anniversary special of the film and they end up through some kind of magic that isn't really explained, but you don't really care. They somehow end up in the film world.
One of the things as well where that's all there with the story and it's great, but what is awesome about this film, it's the way, like I knew when we actually see the car crash that the mother dies in and at the start you're getting this tone and everything, the way they shoot that is brilliant. Mm. When you're in the cinema, the reason why they end up in the film is the cinema's on fire and the way they lead to it and shoot it is brilliant. This is already, once we get into the film, you already know what kind of a ride you're on with the way they've shot these two elements really brilliantly. Mm. And they really have shot them brilliantly. They literally, they're like, we're going to get out through the exit that's frilled through the screen, cut open the screen, walk into it and end up in the movie. Because of the way they shot it, I was like, I'm right here for this.
Mm.
To put it in a way to like sort of help people who haven't really heard of it, it's Last Action Hero for horror movies. So if you've seen Last Action Hero, it is literally the same thing where he goes into the movie and then they have to deal with all the tropes.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I'm a massive fan of Adam Devine. I think he is one of the funniest people on the planet.
Yeah.
Who was he?
He's Kurt.
He's the
sleazy little
guy. He's hilarious. Did you guys see the outtakes at the credits?
Yeah. Yes. He's great. God, and so like, so I love him. He's in a show called Workaholics and he's brilliant. Mm-hmm. I've said I don't like musicals, but he's great in the Pitch Perfect movies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's great in everything he pops up in.
We're not doing a podcast of the Pitch Perfect movies. I'm saying that right now.
God, no.
He's getting a spin-off, by the way.
I heard that too. But when he screams, there's a scream that he does and it makes me laugh no matter how many times I hear it. And he does it.
I know which one you're talking about as well.
And he's just this guttural, but it's almost like a scream like you'd get from a woman in a horror movie that it comes out of him, this stocky little guy. And it's just so funny. And I think there's a scene, like I'm trying to jump around a little bit, but there's a scene where he's sitting with the big hunky guy, Chris, who's supposed to be her new boyfriend. And they're talking about, he's like, I've slept with this many women and rah, rah, rah. And then he's like, you're talking about being gay. And the guy goes, well, I have two dads. He goes, no, you don't. You know, it's like, you say
no,
something.
No, the line is amazing. He goes, well, you can't have two dads because gay men like disco. They don't have time for families or something like
that's
that.
That's right.
It's brilliant. And I was watching it, and this is when Chris, my housemate, walks into the room and goes, well, he's got a point. And we just keep on going about his day.
But I think what makes that
there's a little bit
moment
at the end, and he goes, actually, that sounds wonderful.
Exactly. He actually says, I was about to say, that's what makes that line, is he turns around and he goes, actually, that sounds really good. Like, really good lifestyle. Like, they just go to the, what does he say? They go to the disco
I'll see if I can find it.
Something else. And then he's like, actually, that sounds really good. And it does.
The thing with this, everyone,
gay guys can't have kids. They're too busy going to discos and having sex with each other. It's actually a pretty cool lifestyle.
And having sex with each other.
And I love it. And you know what? As the gay in the village that is this podcast, yeah, we are.
You're gay?
I have to say. But, like, this is the way they do this. You know, the characters are stuck in the movie. They're all, you know, just... They're all these hyperactive teen tropes that sit really nicely as well. Then they're in the movie with the characters that are... You know, there's the one character, she can't help but keep being slutty because that's her role in the film.
Amazing.
And it's just the comedy of it.
She's literally
so trying,
they have to wrap her up in oven mitts and a life vest, and she's literally trying to pull her life vest open with her oven mitts because she so desperately wants to take her top off. But I think what is, and this is what's really fun about how they play with the tropes, is this trope of, like, you know, women getting their tits out and that being, you know, a trigger in the film that brings on the killer. They weaponize that, and they actually use that as a way to lure the killer in to try and catch him, which is so fucking awesome.
Smart. Like, it's just so great.
Yeah, it's really smart. It's beautiful to see that done in that way. And I actually, one of the things I love about, I mean, I love everything about this film, but I love it's the brilliant. Way it's shot. There are certain shots when the killer, Billy, is chasing the characters through the woods, and the shots are beautiful. Like, they pull back and you've got the gorgeous, like, purple-blue skyline in the background and the silhouette of the trees and the kids.
I'm assuming they shot these in a green screen soundstage. Like, there's no other way.
A lot of it did seem like that,
yeah, and then Billy on fire chasing them. And you can just see that this is a love letter to the genre. Like, it's the kind of shots that they couldn't do in the 70s. They couldn't create that kind of shot. And then we've got it now. We've got these beautiful images. Like, they look like posters. They're just gorgeous.
And I mean, and we've also got this great storyline weaved in it as well, where the lead actress is, like, her mum has died, who was in this film, and now she's in the film. And her mum talks at the start about how she hates that she's always seen as that character. And then she's in the film trying to save her mum from dying. She's just one of the characters that dies because she loses her virginity. She's in the film trying to save her mum from dying. And even though the character knows she's not her mum, she knows there's this connection. It's fucking smart. Like, I loved it. I just, what a ride, and what a ride to get to. And then the fantastic twist at the end. Just, I loved it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm shocked this did not do better at the movies. Like, I really am.
And the twist was so much fun. And I was really proud of myself because when I first watched it, I picked up the twist before it happened, when they went to look for something in the hallway. And as soon as I saw Gizmo on the
you saw it. I saw it
because for a second you see Gizmo and then they go back in. And I was, as first time I watched it, I was like, they're in the fucking sequel. They're in the 80s. Because that's fucking Gizmo. And then it goes so back good. And then they show Gizmo, like, close up and the Rubik's Cube, and it's like, yes, such a good ending.
It also reminded me of, have either of you seen Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
Yes.
Yes.
Similar sort of thing where it's the comedy where
I love that film.
That's more of the mistaken identity playing on the tropes, whereas this is like meta playing on the tropes, like that sort of stuff.
It's that film. We've got to find a way to watch that for something because Jesus, then, that's funny.
But then there's also Bruce Campbell one we talked about when we talked about what's the name? Army of Darkness as well. Similar sort of thing where they have this meta trope of people being stuck in a movie or stuck, people thinking they're one thing when they're actually totally different.
It's so much fun.
I think for me, I don't get me wrong, I love the movie. I think it needed either to play up the gore a little bit more, or, like, there were times when I thought it didn't understand what it wanted to be, a couple of points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was, I think the thing with the mum got a bit sappy towards the end. Like, it was like, yeah, okay, we get it. Come on, let's go move on. Like, that, not saying I didn't like it at all, but it was just more.
No, but it wasn't the driving force of the film. Like, I see what you're saying. It's like, here's this chunk, then here's this chunk, then here's this chunk.
It was a little bit disjointed in parts, but I, and also those sorts of movies, like, I was waiting for more, like when the girl who wants to take her top off falls into the bear trap, you just see, and that's it. Like there's nothing else about it. And I was like, I wanted to, I think it's just the slasher lover in me wanted a little bit more of that, a little bit more,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Two characters blow up in a car. Like it's
your bloodlust wasn't satiated.
Yeah, I needed a little bit more on the violence.
But it could have been, and that's with the way this film was, playing that violence a little bit more just would have added to the comedy. So I see what you're saying.
And I'm talking like, I'm not saying like subtle. I mean like go over the top, like have her head get
That's what I felt like.
And blood spray and like, we would have had a laugh.
That's why I felt like what happened with the car explosion. Do you know what I mean? Like when we had that, we had the car crash, the car explosion. Like I was laughing. I wasn't freaked out. I was pissing myself. But then I guess when we shift around to the others, it's, yeah, completely different.
I just, I needed, like I said, I liked it. I just needed that, just that little bit extra, I think. It was to either go more like full comedy horror or go for it, but go, if you want to go a bit more sappy, go a little, go sappier then. Like it's, you know, I needed.
I love the sappy bit though. The bit at the end with the mum and the dancing.
I actually loved that. And it really got to me. I was like, ooh.
But I see what you're saying as well, because but I think as well, the way they do their car crash at the start, when it happened, like I was like, oh, I didn't realize I needed this. But it's also
car
that
crash
extra
was the
level
one later on with the girl to be the final girl for the movie. When that one happened, I needed more from that. I didn't need still two characters in a car accident.
I'm jumping around a bit. I was saying when I was saying I love the car crash, I was talking about the one at camp. I was laughing like crazy at that one, not at the other one. But then I'm loving and the fact that they make this moment and she's dancing around and then keep cutting to the woods and is he gonna show up or what until she takes off her tits. But you're right, takes off her shirt or a breast or whatever.
I know you're getting ready for drag, but we're not talking about taking off our tits and putting them back on.
Fair call. It's just and you're right, it could have just amped the sarcasm up a little bit more with the visuals and the tone, to make them hit a little more. But
it's still a fun movie.
Part of me's like, this is what I want the New Mutants film to be for the X-Men, and I know it's not going to be in it.
I want to just also say I love the closing line for the not for the film, but for the first film, where she says, you fucked with the wrong virgin. And I was like,
virgin, it's great.
Yes, yes, I see what you did there. That is fantastic. Yeah.
It's brilliant. Like, it was brilliant ride.
Really, really fun. Really fun film.
So much so that I watched it twice and Chris was walking in and out watching and has asked that can we re-watch it so that he can watch it from the start. And Chris has been along for the ride. And I'll be honest, like Chris watching Sleepaway Camp was very confused the whole way through as well. It's fun and games.
Yeah. My gosh, what a ride. This has been another slashes. Amazing episode. And we hope
we're near the end of our
it.
Month now.
Oh,
we're
almost can there. You believe it?
You know what? And if you have thoughts about Sleepaway Camp, or if you can point us to any articles that can tell us some more information, or what you thought of these films, we want to hear about them. Jump on our socials and tell us.
Yeah, please do.
It's so weird to be in that meta place where we're recording this now that the podcast is live. So my brain is thinking, what do we need to say?
I know. It's weird. We're almost done. And
yeah, we're almost done. There's only three more episodes to go.
And they're going to be fucking corkers. You're going to love it. Just to get my bogan
absolutely.
On. You can't, as someone, a friend said to me recently, you can take the Emma out of Lilydale, but you can't take the Lilydale out of Emma. I was like,
I love it.
Yeah.
Fair.
Well, everyone, I guess we'll see you tomorrow then.
Yes, we will.
Yeah.
Bye.
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 Well, that's it for Slashers. Tomorrow, we dive into the classics. Remember, today is the last day for you to enter our EP31 poll to decide which film we're going to be watching. I'll just let you all know, the three films that are currently sitting on top of the 9-film list are Cabin in the Woods, I Know What You Did Last Summer, and Ready or Not. But I'm not going to tell you how many votes they have. Jump to our website, place your vote, and you find out on October 31st which film we're going to be reviewing. See you tomorrow.